every once in a while, investing in a shiur, which is related to a medical topic. So I'm always nervous whenever I speak about medicines. I always look around the audience just to make sure there are no doctors there. Because if there are doctors there, then I don't want to say anything that's foolish. I found myself in a similar quandary today. When I spoke to my benefit a couple of days ago about speaking about something which is related to the halachas of speech as it pertains to modern technology. So maybe the halachas of speech, okay, maybe I can just say one or two things about it. As it pertains to modern technology, I felt like I better check around the room to make sure that nobody here knows more than I do. So I look around, I see everybody here knows more than I do. So I was in a friend this afternoon, so I called my wife. I asked her, what should I do? So she said, let me tell you a little bit about modern technology. So she told me what I was supposed to know. So you can blame, if I say anything that's wrong, you blame her. Then I got a little touch up with my kids, so they filled me in on some of the details also. So if I say anything that's off the charts, don't blame her. Blame the rest of my family. Okay, so those words of introduction. I think there's a really basic misconception that many of us have when we relate to the halachas of speech, issues of speech, particularly speech, when I use the word speech today, I'm not only going to be talking about the old style way of speaking, namely actually using one's mouth and lips and listening with one's ears, but speech here is going to be used in a more general sense in terms of all types of communication, whether the communication is as old-fashioned as talking on a regular phone. My kids still can't get over the fact that I tell them when I grew up, so a phone didn't have, we didn't have telephones. I lived after Alexander Bell, but we had circles. Yeah, you probably see that.
Oh, yeah.
Like your great-grandparents.
Yeah, the old movie.
We had those circles. So I said, the great mile of those circles, those are what I'm talking about, is instead of pressing buttons, so you had a turn. And the other, great disadvantage of those phones was that there was no such thing as redial. So if you called somebody's number, it'd take you 10 minutes to dial. And when the number was busy, so there was no call waiting either in those days, so you had to hang up and start all over again. So sometimes if you had to call 15, 20 times for the person to pick up, so you would end up with a sore finger. But the mile of those phones was, is that you thought 100 times before you actually said something, because it took you 20 minutes to plan the phone call. So whether you plan on communicating through phones, whether you communicate through any other more modern day means of communication, everything is going to be subject to all the halachas that we're speaking about in terms of the halachas that govern quote unquote speech, i.e. communication. So I think that there's a common misconception when we approach these areas is that we think, well, there is no Jewish way per se that a person communicates, that a person speaks. So I understand there's a Jewish way a person eats. We understand it's kosher, it's not kosher. We've been there still long enough to know it's mahadran, not mahadran, different. We understand what hashkachas means. We understand what the world of kashrus means. Most of us already understand that there's a concept of the way a Jew dresses, the way a Jew behaves in the area of inyanim tznius. So now we understand as well. But somehow when it comes to the method of communication, so many of us have the idea that we live in the 21st century, so we communicate the same way that the rest of the world communicates. We have the same phones that they do, and we have the same computers that they do, and we go on the same internet that they do. And what does it have to do with the world of Torah? So I think that this is a, cannot be any further from the truth, and I think that they're just an interesting insight perhaps from the story of Tisha B'Av, the famous Gemara of Masechet Gittin. But Kamtza will perhaps shed some light in his introductory remarks to what we want to talk about today. The Gemara tells us in the famous story about Kamtza Makamtza how the person was insulted, and Bar Kamtza was insulted that he wasn't inviting him. That is the whole story. So he sends a korban to the Beis HaMikdash. He convinces the Romans to send the korban to the Beis HaMikdash, but he makes a little bit of a move in the korban. But he wants to make a move in such a way that the goyim won't realize that it's a move, but the Jews will realize that it's a move. So he does it in a kunst. He makes a move in the lip of the animal. So it's a very small move. Nobody can really see it. So in the goyish standards of blemishes, they wouldn't consider this to be a move. Whereas in the halacha, it's considered to be a move. So he realized that the Kohanim won't be able to bring it as a korban. He won't be able to explain that to the Romans, because the Romans never heard of that's a mum. And the Romans are going to get angry at the Jews in the Beis HaMikdash. That was the grandiose plan. So if you stop for a moment and you think, that idea that there's a kind of a mum, there's a kind of a blemish that is considered to be a blemish for Jews, yet for the outside world is not considered to be a blemish, it's interesting to note that blemish is in the lip. So perhaps that's symbolic of the fact, not just in terms of, I hope this movement, I'm not learning the Sefer Becheres right now, but in terms of symbolic, in terms of Pi Hashkafa, that the lips, the way a person speaks, the way a Jew speaks in a different way than a non-Jew speaks, that the standards that we have to live up to, the way we communicate with one another, have to be different than the standards of the Umas Olam around us. And perhaps this was the remez, the Makom Patish, the final end, the tragic end of the Kamsa Rakamsa story, was ultimately what brought about the Beis HaMikdash, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Was the Sinas Chinam, was the chait of Dibor, the chait of the way people spoke to one another, the way that Kamsa Rakamsa, the way somebody was embarrassed publicly, and the way that no doubt that there was Sinas Chinam, there was Sinas Chinam fighting, and all the bickering, all the chatoyim that brought about through communication in a proper way. So these are movements, and sometimes in the outside world, this is acceptable behavior. And for us, as Jews, these are not considered to be acceptable behavior. So without those words of introduction, so we have to really get a little bit of a better understanding how does the Torah want us to communicate with one another, and particularly in a world which is known for communication. We're in the generation of communication. So what exactly are the standards in halacha and hashgacha that should be governing the way we communicate with one another? So there is one chait that's considered to be of utmost significance. We just mentioned it before: the notion of embarrassing one another. One need not elaborate too much upon this, but just one to Mamar Chazal. I think she put things in the proper perspective. The Gemara speaks about Rabbim Vechaveh Rabbim, somebody who publicly humiliates somebody else, is Ein Lecheret Olam Haba. But this is something that if a person is constantly doing, constantly involved in these types of activities, so this is something that Chalila v'Chalila can cost the person their entire future, everything, their all the time that they do, if they're constantly involved in this chait, the Mav Bechaveh Berabim, so that's something which is beyond no seriousness. So I'll compare Mav Bechaveh Berabim, embarrassing, humiliating somebody publicly, to the Aveir of Shvichas Domim, the Aveir of actually killing somebody. Rabbi Yona writes in his famous Musa Sefer Shari Tshuva that this is not just a drush, this is not just Musa, there's a real halacha to this. Rabbi Yonah writes that commenting on the Gemara says that if a person has a choice between publicly humiliating somebody, or actually getting killed, so the Gemara says that it's better for a person to die rather than to publicly humiliate somebody else. So Rabbi Yonah says, why should that be so? We know that Pikuach Nefesh is doing everything. Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos, and it's Docha Kashrus, and it overturns Yom Kippur, and everything is pushed away from Pikuach Nefesh. So how come you have to give up your life rather than embarrass somebody? So Rabbi Yonah says, because you have to give up your life rather than kill somebody. If somebody puts a gun to your head and says, either kill that person or we're going to kill you, so the din is that person has to get killed. It's not allowed to pull the trigger on somebody else. So Rabbi Yonah says, when you publicly humiliate somebody, that's mamashay pulling the trigger. No less of an aveir than actual shvichas damim. So again, whether we paskin like that in the world of halacha is questionable, but the idea is enough to shake us up a little bit about the significance of the aveir of mamashay pulling the trigger. You know, until fairly recently, the notion of rabbin, the notion of public anything, not just humiliation, but public anything, was a very, very limited sense. So the world that our great-great-grandparents lived in, so their notion of rabbin, what was the greatest, the biggest bizarre you give to somebody, and they, you have to daven in shul, when there are all the 15 people in shul, so you get up and you call the guy a bad name, you say, you rabbin, no, you Russia, you behemoth, you blah, blah, blah. You get into a fight with a guy, and wow, all 15 people in the middle of in a little shtetl about a tefka hear about it, and everybody gets all upset about it. That's Ma'am Rechaveh Barabbin. So needless to say, the ability of Ma'am Rechaveh Barabbin has grown by leaps and bounds with Manazet. We have the ability to create a rabbin that goes well beyond our Dalai Ramos. We have the ability, of course, to create a rabbin that goes global within less than the amount of time that it takes to press a button. So one has to be aware of that, that any time a person is involved in humiliating somebody else, embarrassing somebody else, and again, as we said before, the embarrassment need not be done with words, b'zman hazeh. We have other more efficient ways of technology. But one has the ability to involve nechaveh b'rabbin to the extent that it is mind-boggling, the extent that when Chazal made the statement, Ma'am Rechaveh Barabim Kilu Hargo, so they didn't, they weren't talking about today's world. But how much more so, Kavachorbe, Menoshe Kavachorbe, would be true in today's world. So again, you guys know a little bit more about the details, probably better than I do, but from the little perusing of some different types of comments that I've seen, I'm not such a big person to go on blogs, I have more important things to do in my life, but it's unbelievable. It's lo yuman ki supar, the amount of ma'am b'chaveh b'rabim that can take place. The person says, makes a comment, and he embarrasses somebody, and the problem is you don't even know how far that embarrassment went. I send an email saying something embarrassing about somebody else, and the next person decides to post it on for the whole world. So I was involved. I was a catalyst for Mal B'chavei Rabbim. So the stakes are so much greater, B'zman Hazeh. One has to be so much more careful. But not only is the ability to be, the degree of the degree of embarrassment is multiplied so many times over, but there's another big problem that we have is manazeh, not only in the realm of Ba'al Pei Chavei, but in a certain sense in all of our Gadol Chavei's, is that the Gemara tells us that there are different types of Gadolim. Sometimes you can have a person who breaks into a bank and he steals $1,000. It's a terrible affair. We're not advocating that. But the Gemara says, if you could shoot him for that, what do you do? You take $1,000, you go back to the bank, make it careful, not careful. Okay, fine. But you can pay it back. You can make up the chait of Geneva. But there's a type of Geneva that a person can't make up. And that's if a person is cheating, let's say, on his weights and measures. So he has a store and be poshkin around the scales a little bit. So every time somebody comes to buy meat, so you're jipping him, you're selling him $10 worth of meat, but you're only giving him $8.50 worth of meat. Trimming the fat, or whatever it's called. So the bottom line is, you have no idea. Now comes your Kippur time and you wanted to tshuva, so you have no idea who you cheated. How you get the tshuva for that? So I understand if I stole from one person, it's easy to do tshuva. But if I cheated 1,000 people, I don't know who they are. So the Gemara says to the Baal, what are you going to do? You have to take money and give the money to the public, to the shul, and to the base medrash, and to the mikvah, and to the Arab, and hopefully you'll be able to cover everybody who you may have cheated in some way or form. So that's true in the olden days, when you lived in a small town. So if I owned a store, I'm selling meat, so there are only 100 people in town, so I don't know exactly who I cheated. But if I give money to the Beis Medrash and to the shul, so I'm probably going to end up, in a sense, benefiting and paying back 100 people. But what if I cheated millions of people? What if I'm running a Ponzi scheme? What if I cheated billions of people? I'll never know who the people who I cheated was. So how is a person ever going to be able to be chos of a tshuva for such a thing? So I think that the same model you have in the realm of B'nai B'chaveiro as well, in terms of Ba'al Pei Chavei B'Rabim. So in the olden days, when I embarrassed somebody, at least I knew the person was who I embarrassed. I know who I embarrassed, and I know in what context I embarrassed them, and I know who heard the embarrassment. So as terrible as it was, I can at least be chos b'tshuva, I can at least make it up, I can at least do something about it. Ma she'ein kein b'zman hazeh, I don't even know the extent of who I embarrassed. First of all, I don't even know the person. I don't even know necessarily the person's name or embarrassed. I don't even know the context of the person. I don't know who the word is spread to. So one, somebody gets up and gives a shia. Somebody gets up and gives a lecture. Somebody puts something that they thought was very nice and appropriate on YouTube. And someone's sitting in the middle of Nevada and putting something on YouTube. And I'm sitting in Beit Meir and I'm pressing. You got to tell me what I'm using the terms. I press this thumbs up, thumbs down, up, down. I'm saying for, against. The guy's sitting there in Nevada saying, what? Somebody in Beit Meir doesn't like the pictures of my children? How dare you? What? The person in Beit Meir doesn't like, I just said I gave a great shiur. And I gave the guy a thumbs down and said, that was the lousiest shiur ever. And Mamish caused the guy such an embarrassment. And I don't even know who the guy is. I don't know who the guy is. And I have no idea who's reading this. So I'm commenting in Beit Meir, and a guy was speaking in Nevada, and a guy in Alaska is reading it. It's powerful. It's powerful in a good way also. I remember I was once a Moshe Mashurim and put up in Wayu Torah. So I was once saying a shiur, and I got a call later in that day from a fellow in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Anyone know what that is? It's one of when you're flying there to Israel, but you know when you're at that point where it says, Newfoundland, Goosebank, those places that you have no idea where they are when you're flying over the North Atlantic there. So it's in that area. So I was saying a shiur, and some guy calls me that later in the day from Halifax that he was listening to the shiur, and he had a comment in the shiur. I didn't even know there were any people in Halifax. Come on, many Jews in Halifax. So he told me he enjoyed the shiur very much. Okay, good, whatever. He's asking me, Kasha, there, it's fine. So the next day, so I just commented, and I was saying the shiur again. So I said, I was fascinated that I had a discussion with somebody who asked me, Kasha, the shiur guy from Halifax. So within like 10 minutes, the guy calls back, thanks, Rabbi, for the shout-out. So he was so thrilled that here, I don't know what the guy was. I've never met the guy. And yet, Baruch Hashem, he was such a tremendous koach. But you have a tremendous koach for good, you have a tremendous koach for bad as well. So the busha, the chlima that I can give a person who I don't even know, who's accepting the embarrassment, how am I ever going to be chos of a tshuva for that? So this is something that if a person has to really, really think hard before Tisha B'Av, what area to be a little bit more machmir in. So just what seemed to be innocent comments and innocent just gestures in this area can turn into tremendous amount of bitter around it. Even when we're not dealing with embarrassment, even if it's not something that's embarrassing, there's another area of a governed communication and really play out to a tremendous degree, particularly in the world that we live in, and that's the notion of Amnoaz Devarim. The Gemara comments in the Pesuk in Parshas Bahar that the Torah tells us there's a lot of the Torah. It's like even Chazon, it's like Rosh Hashanah, it's like doing Malach on Yom Tov. It's a real McCoy. We're not allowed to be Ma'anes Chavei, we're not allowed to cause tzara to a person. What does it mean? What does Amnoaz Devarim mean? So the Gemara gives a few very innocent examples of Amnoaz Devarim. The Gemara at the end of the fourth time of Metzia says, let's say I see a person who's a Baal Tshuva. And I say to him, you're a Baal Tshuva. I remember the old days when you were Machal Shabbos, when you were it. So the Gemara says, that's innocent. Yeah, I see it because I feel bad. Well, the Gemara says, let's say I walk to the store and I don't really want to buy anything. Machal, I'm just buy anything. It's not kicks. I guess the guy, how much are you selling that for? Let's negotiate. The guy's never spending time, 20 minutes, and he says, thank you very much, and I walk out. If I went in, honestly, I really wanted to buy the thing, I just looking for a good price. Okay, business, that's fine. But if I'm going in knowing full well that I'm not interested in buying it, the Gemara calls that an isim diraisa, and so you're not allowed to be ma'ana somebody else, or no as devarim. I think Gemara gives another example. Let's say if I see a person who's suffering, so I go up to them and I say, oh, let me tell you why you're suffering, because you did a big aveira, so you're a person's allowed to say that about themselves. The Gemara says, if a person's suffering, you should try to make a din b'cheshbon for yourself, but not somebody else's din b'cheshbon. I remember I was... one year, I was living in Cambodia for a couple of years. I got home and back. And I'd been back in America for a couple of months. And I came back there to Israel. And right after I came there to Israel, I got hurt. I had to be heavily in bed for a couple of weeks, whatever it was. So I was very frustrated over here. I just come back there to Israel to learn. I was having kibbutzes around the clock in bed. I just had a little trouble in my back, whatever. So there was a guy who came over to visit me. No longer learning yeshiva, he heard I was sick, so he came by to visit me, and he says to me as follows: he says, it says in Chumash, in Parshas Mitzora, "Nasati neged tzaras v'beis eretz achuzaschem." You're going to come to Eretz Yisrael, and Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you neged tzaras in your houses, and your whole house is going to have to be destroyed. So he asked the kasha, the Bali Musar, asked, "How come the neged tzaras comes dafka in Eretz Yisrael?" So when you live in Chutz Laaretz, so Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't look as carefully to Yechatoyim because the stakes aren't so great. If you come to Eretz Yisrael, then Kadosh Baruch Hu looks b'chuta asayim. He looks really carefully, so he finds any neg, any aveir, he's going to punish you right away. He's going to get destroyed. So this guy said to me, he said, "See, Kol Zman, you're in Chutz Laaretz, you felt fine. Now you came to Eretz Yisrael, but Asaf can get Tzaraas from Eretz Chuzasim." So I remember I was laying there in bed, and I said, "I can't believe what that guy just said to me." I said, "That's not much like the blatant violation of exactly what the Gemara Bafetzia says." You're not allowed to say when somebody's suffering, you're suffering because you're chayt. I don't know, what was he thinking? So it was funny because like about a week later, I get a letter from him. After those days, people used to write letters. Not email, 40 bucks.
What's the letter?
Well, that's a letter. You know, a letter is, okay? When I lived in Kemi Avna, I used to call my parents once a month. Once a month, I used to call collect for 3 minutes. Hello, how are you? Trying, everything's good. Send some more money, whatever, we're good. It was a different experience. I wasn't so long ago. Anyway, so he sent me a letter that says, "I want to ask you b'chiva because I violated the Gemara for second b'chitzia." That says that's exactly what you're not supposed to say to a chayla. So I remember I was really tempted to respond back. You're exactly right. What you did was a violation of that issur, but I felt that would be a violation of Amnoaz Devarim. I was right there. So what's the common denominator between all these things? I'm not allowed to dray a store owner a cup, and I'm not allowed to say that about shoot with something not nice. I'm not allowed to criticize a person for his avay. What's going on? The pshat is Amnoaz Devarim means to annoy somebody. That's what Amnoaz means. I don't even relate to the English word. Annoy. You're not allowed to annoy somebody. Not allowed to bother somebody. To pester somebody. To drive somebody nuts. That's considered to be an isidir ayis of Amnoaz Devarim. So again, this is something which is mind-boggling. The degree of Amnoaz Devarim that can be accomplished today. I read a close friend of mine. She was going out of his mind. She was out of his kelim. Because whatever he was involved, whatever issue he was involved in, somehow caught on to, became a subject of blogs, and this guy's blogging about this, and this guy's blogging about this, and this is coming to this. And I begged the guy, stop reading the blogs, you're digging your own grave. but somehow he couldn't overcome the Yetzer Hara to read the blogs about himself. So he's reading it, and this one's annoying him, and that one's annoying him. It's mamish almost mamish enuchah gedolim mizel. So again, you know, we understand that we eat differently from the outside world. We understand we dress differently. We understand we act differently. We understand all that, but do we understand that we comment differently also? We understand that just because I think somebody deserves a bang over the head doesn't mean that I have to follow through with it. There's a famous comment from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that he said that not every thought that a person has to be said, and not every word that a person said has to be written. Not every word that a person writes has to be published. So Bizman Hazeh, unfortunately, that progression has been completely demolished. Because in the olden days, not so long ago, so a person has a thought. I just read somebody's article about something. Right? This guy came out with a new book. The guy came out and said a shia, whatever it was. I just read something, and I think it's terrible. I think that the rabbi was a terrible drusher, right? It was terrible. So there are different ways for that, my feeling of terrible, to express itself. So if a person goes through the old progression of, well, first he thinks, I think it's terrible. I'm not going to bother saying anything to somebody. I got to go call the phone down 6 times. You know, so my finger hurts. Not worth it. I'll think twice before I say it. And for me to actually write, I'm going to go write. I'll let it to the editor. I have to go write it. Go correct it. Okay, I'll send it. And we'll go to the store. We'll get an envelope. We'll go to the post office. Get a stamp. It's going to take 3 weeks to actually get around to it. So it's not worth it to publish something. You know what it means to publish something? I published a safe a couple of years ago. So it was still done the old way. I was still reading papers. It takes forever to end up publishing something. So the amount of time from the thought until it hits the press is such a long, long time. So whatever criticism I have, whatever bad things I wanted to say, got mellowed out with time. Because man hazeh, what happens is, boom, a thought comes. I have to express it. Who do I have to express it to? The entire word, the world. So I immediately have every single possible permutation of how I can get there. And again, you can fill in the details. It's going to go through Facebook, it's going to go through Yenaman, Shmenaman, email, Shmenaman, whatever I was going to get. So the entire world is going to see every ridiculous thought that I had. Every night. And 3 seconds later, I realized that thought was ridiculous. But guess what? Once it's up there, it's gone. Gone, gone. That's it. The home run's out of the park. Once it's on any form whatsoever up there in cyberspace, it is not retractable. That's it. Finished. In the old days, you could rip up the paper. It's nothing. Once it's there, it is gone. So my wife tells me this very often. She's very much involved in shidduchim. So sometimes in the world of shidduchim, some people want to find out, you know, about information about somebody else. So they'll start looking for them, they'll check their Facebook page, they'll pay them. And sometimes a person did something 5 years ago, and that isn't really them anymore. Right now they're 25, so they wouldn't have done what they did maybe at the age of 20. But right now they're 20, they wouldn't have done at the age of 15. But that's a big problem, because once it's up there, it's potentially open for the entire world. So one has to be so careful in the realm of Onos Devarim that the ability to violate Onos Devarim is so profound, it's so simple, Bizman Hazeh. All the safeguards that HaKadosh Baruch Hu built into the Teva of thought, the speech, the writing, the publishing, all those safeguards that were around for so many thousands of years don't exist anymore. So it just means that we have to be more careful. It means that a person has to, you have to put your own together, that from the thought to the pressing the button, think 1,000 times before you press that button, before you send out that email, before you whatever you're doing, before any message is sent out, just think, is this an honest or not? The same way you wouldn't dream of putting food into your mouth without the groceries or not. Sure. Do I know this hashgacha? Do I accept this hashgacha? Before that email is sent, is this something that meets the criteria of an honest devar? If you've noticed, I haven't even spoken about Lashon Hara yet, but everyone's probably thinking, well, we're going to talk about this is going to talk about Lashon Hara again today. So I have to speak about it for a minute. Otherwise, I have a hoshia about speech and I talk about Lashon Hara. So if I say the basic violation, the basic issue of Lashon Hara is really fairly simple, really straightforward. What's called Mesapa B'Knus Chaveira. When a person says something negative about somebody else, that is Lashon Hara. That's the definition of Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara need not be true. I'm sorry, need not be false. I'm sorry. If Lashon Hara is false, then it's even worse than Lashon Hara. It's called Motzi Shemra. Just the mere Mesapa B'Knus Chaveira is a problem. Mesapa B'Knus Chaveira, I don't think I'm doing anything bad. If so innocent. What am I doing? I'm just saying that the guy Shia was no good. I'm just saying that the rabbi doesn't know what he's talking about. I'm just saying that that school is a terrible school. I'm just saying that that shul has a lot of fights. I'm just saying that that political party within Klal Yisrael is up off the wall. What are they doing? Nothing. It's just simple. I'm talking. He's talking. Get him. Stop. That's exactly. That's what the Sabbath and the Sunday is all about. So the Issa Lashon Hara is once again, is multiplied by the people who the Lashon Hara is accepted by. Chavetz Chaim, in his Akdamah, the Sefer Chavetz Chaim, spelled out that the Aveir of Lashon Hara is the basic violation of Lashon Hara, and then one can extrapolate it, one can multiply the Aveir by leaps and bounds. So Chavetz Chaim says, let's say a person speaks Lashon Hara about the Talmud Chacham. So not only is it Lashon Hara, but it's also the Vazat Tamir Chacham. A person speaks Lashon Hara about a parent. So not only is it Lashon Hara, it's a violation of Kibbutz Avayim. A person speaks Lashon Hara about a ger. So not only is it Lashon Hara, it's causing tzar to someone who's a ger, someone who's a little more, not part of the mainstream community. So comes the Chafetz Chaim and says, each time you speak Lashon Hara, it's not just one Aveira. There are a lot, multiple Aveiras. Then the Chafetz Chaim goes on and says that there's an Aveira for a person to be Makabal Lashon Hara, to accept Lashon Hara as being true. So every time you speak Lashon Hara, when you cause somebody else to receive that Lashon Hara, that's your Aveir also. Because that's the Fenibir. I'm causing somebody else to accept Lashon Hara. So the Chafetz Chaim says, do the math. If you speak Lashon Hara to one person, okay, that's bad. You have an Aveir, he has an Aveir, you cause an Aveir, the math ends. But if you speak Lashon Hara to 1,000 people, speak Lashon Hara to 1,000,000 people, Chafetz Chaim was sitting in a little town in Rabin. He couldn't envision for 1,000,000 years, he couldn't figure out what would be going on in today's world. Imagine a person could say one word of Lashon Hara to 5 trillion people. 5 trillion, 5 billion, okay. 6 billion, most of the people in China aren't listening to emails. Okay, whatever it is. So 4.5 billion people, minus some people in Africa. Right, 3 billion, whatever it is. Whoever's listening to your great information. So one little nuance, one little comment, giving one little, as we said, the thumbs down to one person, but it's been multiplied hundreds and hundreds and thousands times over. So these are really, really serious things. These are things that we have to take into consideration. So up until this point, we've been talking really negative. It's like one of these like really dreary shiur. Like Rabbi just got up and said, you can't do this, and you can't do that, and you can't do this. And if you do it, it's $1,000,000 worse than it ever was. So there are both things. So I wanted to just take the opportunity to end a little bit on the tractov. Even Megillas Eicha, even Yirmiyahu Novi, don't want to end up Megillas Eicha on a bad note. It's the end of Hashiveinu Hashem Elokeinu Meshuvah. That we have tremendous potential. All the things that we've said in today's talk are all true. Shani's not that they're all true, but they're all working with the basic underlying premise. And the underlying premise is that the world of technology that we have today has the ability to mass produce, has the ability to reach the masses in such a way that was unheard of until fairly recently. And that can, of course, be used for bad, which it has been used for bad many, many times over, as everyone is aware of, but it has tremendous cost to be used for good as well. So I cannot tell you how many countless times people have come up to me, and not only the person who called me from Nova Scotia, but all walks of life, people have come up to me and introduce themselves, that, hi, Rabbi Sablowski, I'm your Talmud. Look at the guy and say, I don't even know who you are. Since we're 30 years, I didn't say that to him, because I don't want to be mobbed like a very Ram. Say, you're 30 years older than me, you're my Talmud. Says, I'm your virtual Talmud. I've been listening to Yeshua for the last 10 years. And, well, it's unbelievable. People have it's a tremendous koach. A person has the ability to spread Torah through modern technology. A person has the ability to learn Torah through modern technology. Nobody has any excuses today that they're going somewhere, they don't have safety, they don't have this, they don't have that. Like, you just press a few button here and there, you have everything, kola tarakula mamsha, at your fingertips. Remember, I was, again, I'm not so up to date in this kind of stuff, but I always marvel that, I sit next to sometimes a guy in a chasana. I'll usually come to a chasana. I carry my chumash in my pocket. I'll be holding on to a gemara in case a chaprain. If you're between the first dance or something, I'm walking around. I can walk with 6 different svarim. My wife always screams at me. I'm a mess. And another guy sits down next to me and he starts pulling out one thing. He's got yobik. He's got kol tarkus. He's got zayers. He's got yushamis. He's got sifras. He's got tesefta. This guy's got a whole shit quality based on a little two by nothing thing. So maybe someday I'll reach tell these zayers to that at the point. But it's an amazing koach. My brother was an anesthesiologist. So he tells me that he gets most of his learning done in the middle of the operations. because he said that most times, maybe I shouldn't say this publicly, that anesthesiologists have to be there at the beginning of the end. You've got to make sure the guy goes to sleep, and then you got to make sure the guy wakes up at the end of the operation. And in between, you got to make sure the guy, you know, doesn't die in the middle. But otherwise, it's not like the surgeon, you know, he's kind of hopefully not learning in the middle, hopefully cutting. So he says, you know, as long as you keep your eyes on the machines and everything, you can do other things also. So he says, he mama still learns, he's got his little... Doesn't come into the operating room with 16 smart. He's got his one little YouTube by nothing, and he's got a cold turkey cool on it. So it's amazing. Nobody can have an excuse for as much as that. If they don't have the ability to learn on the run, you don't have the ability to follow Shirim, to listen. It's tremendous. It's gevaldik. So Vice HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a tremendous opportunity in today's technology. And it's all up to us. And we really, really focus. That Gemara in Maseches Gittin, where the Gemara tells us that the standards of what constitutes the Jewish lips are different from what constitutes the non-Jewish lips. What a Jew uses technology for is not the same as the outside world uses. We have the opportunity to use these wonderful, wonderful gifts that Hashem has bestowed upon us for good, but we have to be aware that at the same time they can be used for good, so they can be used for tremendous harm as well. So again, hopefully some of these halachas, a little bit more diktuk in this area, especially at this time, the time when we're trying to be misakeh, the averus of Sinas Chinam, the averus primarily of the Chaveiro, so hopefully the Baruch will give us the prophecy at Nishmaya to be able to use these gifts in the proper way rather than creating more Sinas Chinam, create more Avas Chinam, more Avas Satura, more Avas Yisrael in this room.
You mentioned that about not putting down schools.
Yeah.
It was really funny because one of my rabbis, I'm not going to mention, but he put down one of the schools I used to go to. Like I should tell him, Rabbi, I love you.
In terms of annoying friends and siblings is not a big
Annoying?
Right?